Hi, I'm Rob Wright.
And I'm Jen Follett.
And I'm Andrew Hickey.
And we are here to discuss the top stories for CRN, the front page 5, for the week ending. I got it. October 14th.
That's good.
So I remember the date, so we're making progress.
You're aware of your surroundings. I am.
You can pass the second grade.
Yes, I have graduated. So we have some interesting stories this week. Two that came from Andrew. Andrew, would you like to kick us off with a little BlackBerry action?
Sure, yeah. Our neighbors to the north at RIM experienced a little bit of an outage. It was actually a major outage that started Monday this week in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. People were having trouble sending and receiving messages, having trouble accessing the mobile web. By Wednesday, by day 3, it made its way to the U.S., Canada, and Latin America, and RIM went into complete damage control mode, recording videos, holding impromptu press conferences. Turns out that they're blaming it on a core switch failure in Europe and are saying that the failover also failed, despite having been successfully tested not long before.
So a double fail.
So it was a fail and then a failover fail. It failed. the estimate, RIM hasn't, I think RIM has something right now about 70 million BlackBerry users. And there are, the numbers haven't come out yet, but it's in the millions of people who are affected by this. And there are people in our own office who aren't getting their messages. And the reason they gave for it actually making it to the U.S. was that everything got so backlogged in Europe that people from the U.S. were trying to send messages to BlackBerry users in Europe, creating a logjam in the nodes here.
Right.
So they could not be relayed overseas.
Right.
And it's just a total disaster.
They haven't really said much about when it's going to be over, have they?
No. I mean, they said most of services restored, but I mean, even... the CEO, Mike Lazaridis, co-CEO, excuse me, said that he can't confidently say when full service is going to be restored. So for most people, everything is coming back. It's just when it'll be back to normal. And they vowed that no email messages are going to be lost in this debacle.
Yeah.
And it's just, RIM's, you know, had a really tough go the past few months.
Mm-hmm.
Poor quarterly performance. They've really struggled to keep their relevance among Android and the iPhone. And then you have iOS coming out and the iPhone 4S, iOS 5 and the iPhone 4S coming out this week. And it's just, you know, insult to injury.
I'm going to say two things. First, I'm going to say that I don't understand how so many companies can have redundant backups and failovers and all this stuff, and I almost wish that RIM had come out and said we got hacked, we got PlayStation networked,
and that was another thing. They assured that there was no
lightning.
They found no evidence of hack or security.
There was an earthquake. A giant squid attacked our underwater
giant squid attack.
Yes, underwater data center or something.
Versus an unexplainable failover failure.
It would just, I'd feel better about the state of IT management in our industry if there was some type of cause other than, whoops, something didn't work the way it should have worked, even though we tested it, like you said, we've been tested.
That's the worst part, we had been successfully tested. Had it?
Really? I know. And it's
it worked every other time.
It's sad. My other thought is, this is particularly big news because... obviously, we live in a mobile world now. Mobility is huge. And this is the last thing that RIM needs.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing.
RIM just can't catch a break right now.
The playbook kind
the,
of
the playbook
came out. Yeah,
they've had layoffs. They've had terrible quarterly performance. They're losing market share at an amazing rate. And it's just not their time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have... their biggest competitors coming out with more innovative interest. I mean, Android, it's something astronomical, the number of Android devices activated per day, like in the hundreds of thousands. the iPhone 4S sold 1 million in the first 24 hours of the pre-order. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can, but you wouldn't need to. Speaking of Android, let's move on to Google.
Go for it.
Good segue there. So Google did some updating of its cloud services. Tell us about that, Andrew.
Yeah, they did some updating of its cloud services. Most notably, they updated the pricing of Google Cloud Storage. It used to be called Cloud Storage for Developers. They dropped that, and they're calling it Cloud Storage. Dropping the price really to just pennies per terabyte, pennies, and chopping the bandwidth costs and the actual storage capacity costs itself, making it cheaper for developers to use, you know, storage-intensive build and create storage-intensive apps, and really to kind of take a jab at Amazon Simple Storage Service S3. You know, now I haven't done the actual price comparison, but I mean it's a really affordable cloud storage option. Google's been really making this new services push. Just in the past couple of weeks, they've always had that Google Cloud Services offering. But you remember we talked last week about them, Brent pushing some of the stuff out to the channel.
Sure.
These updates are good for Google partners. They're good for developers on using App Engine and using Google's cloud properties, and really anybody who's getting into the cloud game.
It's interesting that this happened this week, too, when the post from that Google engineer, Stevie, and I can't remember his last name.
Yegi.
And one of the things he mentioned was sort of, he talked a lot about the envy of Amazon's cloud services and how they've built sort of a cohesive platform around that. And, he basically saying that Google should do the same with a lot of its products, but... good timing, I guess, for Google, because it seems like they're kind of building it out and tying it together a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of giving app developers and, you know, folks working in the cloud right now a real full suite that, you know, they can only really get from a couple of players, and Amazon among them, but it's really just, it's giving them more robust options and then kind of in one fell swoop. Yeah. You don't have to go off Google to develop really good cloud apps anymore.
There you go.
I think it's really interesting how all this cloud storage stuff is starting to hit all at the same time. I mean, it's kind of like a sign when it hits, you know, on the consumer side that it's, you know, also hitting in the business side as well with like the Apple iCloud and, you know, everyone and their mother has a storage cloud service targeted at consumers, specifically around songs and... It's just really cool how it's all like coming together right now, and I think really because it's all coming together across the board makes it a real thing that's here for the long term.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting market. It's really going to be because pretty much anybody that's doing well in the consumer space has a business offering as well. So it's where Google's doing cloud storage for businesses, there also talks that they're doing a cloud drive to compete with iCloud and the Amazon's consumer cloud storage properties. It's really...
The story you had today on the site about Box.net.
Box.net, yeah, offering, 50 gig of free cloud storage to people who use iOS to give a kick to iCloud and say, hey, not so fast.
Well, do you want to stick around for some more stories, or should we let Andrew go? Stick around.
Let's move on to the next story. Long pause.
What do we have up next?
The next story is Dell.
Dell. What happened with Dell?
Dell had a little conference this week called Dell World.
That's right.
They had a lot going on there. They had a lot of big names there. They had, obviously, Michael Dell himself. They had Steve Ballmer. They had Mark Benioff. They had Vivek Kundra. They pulled out the stops for this thing. But the one we're actually zeroing in on here... and all of that stuff coverage is on our site right now, CRN.com. But the one we're zeroing in on is actually the Michael Dell keynote, where he talked about, it was a two-part story. One was the importance of the PC business to Dell's overall solutions, which was, without naming HP, was a jibe at HP and their PSG plans.
Sure.
And the other part of that story, though, was about 10 minutes into that keynote, he focused on the channel and how important Dell's channel is to their overall strategy. And he talked about the number of channel partners that they're going after. And he said that they're expecting to hit 100,000 partners in that program globally.
100,000 partners.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
That's in the near term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, not like 5 years down the road, but like soon. That's pretty incredible when you consider, you know, 10 years ago where they were.
Yeah.
Dude,
I mean,
you're getting Adele and direct.
And the photo I loved, which we didn't actually use on our site because it was kind of a, you know, taken with a mobile phone and the quality wasn't that good. But if you follow our colleague Scott Campbell on Twitter, you'll see it. And it's a photo of, you know, Michael Dell standing in front of a backdrop that says, you know, the channel is key. You know, who thought you'd ever see that?
It's pretty incredible. It's good, though, because, I mean, obviously, I know a lot of people said years ago that they expected, as, you know, Dell grew out its product line and became more sort of business-oriented, that they would have no choice but to go through the channel and all that jazz. And yeah, but they've been, I mean, this really has been like a 180-degree turn. I mean, there have been companies like, I mean, obviously IBM years ago when Lou Gerstner was running IBM, it had a huge stable of partners, huge indirect sales, but you never got like sort of the passion and the interest and sort of the you know, I guess the level of commitment from the guy at the top mm-hmm. at IBM, you know, that you're getting now with Michael Dell. So that's a good thing for the channel. I mean, you're still going to have a lot of partners out there that are saying, I'm not going to trust Dell because they burned me 10 years ago or whatever, or they always undercut me on price when I was selling HP or Compaq. But you know what? It's the new reality. I mean, they are kind of taking the place of where Dell, not Dell, HP used to be. So
maybe still will be. We'll see.
Yes. good foreshadowing.
Brings us to the number two story of the week, which is a report that our friends at HP are actually reconsidering their move to spin off PSG. I can't say it's a surprise.
No.
We've been asking for it. The channel's been asking for it.
Yeah.
I don't know how real it is. You know, I mean, it's to say that they're considering it one way or the other is kind of meaningless at this point, which kind of is my problem with this whole thing, which is, you know, it's more of the flip-floppiness. It's more indecision. It's more lack of clarity. You know, I mean, just decide. Let's go.
Is one of those
just
things.
Pull off the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And make the decision.
Well, this is one of those things that smells like, I mean, obviously there was a lot of speculation that the news leaking about Apotheker possibly being removed and Whitman possibly being made CEO was done by people on the board who said, let's float this out there and see what the stock does, see how people react to it. And this kind of has that same vibe to me because it's, you know, it's given, you know, the journal gets it and, you know, everybody picks it up. I don't know. I actually was on the road, so I don't know what their stock did, if it moved much either way. But, okay, let's say the stock doesn't go down much. Maybe that's a signal, or it doesn't go down at all. Maybe that's a signal to HP, to the board, saying, all right, we need to rethink this. It seems like, you know, people, obviously our partners are in favor of us keeping this. It will help our supply chain on some level. It may hurt our profitability and that the margins on PCs aren't great, but...
I think that Wall Street Journal report that kind of spawned this was based on an internal review that HP had done to found that it would stay more profitable keeping PSG where it was versus spinning it off or getting rid of it.
But that troubles me again. It's this doesn't make any sense to me because if they did this, when was this review done? Like, did they not know this before? Like, this is something that they just commissioned under Meg Whitman and not under Leo Apotheker?
But do you think, I mean, do you like, really think
smells,
they didn't know what
the
market reaction would be? I mean, they've had enough time since the first take came out to know, for important customers, analysts, channel partners, to voice their opinion on it. I mean, I don't know that they needed to float a story, a leak a story, to the Wall Street Journal to gauge people's interest in them keeping PSG.
But you're right. I mean, it does seem like that was the logical move for them to do after all the feedback they've gotten. But I guess, you know, they must be super sensitive at this point about the stock price. It went down more than, you know, not more than, but almost 50% since Leo Apotheker took over. It took a big hit when Meg Whitman came in as CEO. Maybe they're so sensitive about this that they want to float that sort of, you know, that trial balloon to say, okay, let's just make sure that we're not going to get hammered by investors that did want us to sell it. I mean,
maybe it's wishful thinking. My gut is that is the direction they're going. For whatever reason, they can't say it yet, whether it's legal or otherwise, but they're trying to stem the free fall in customer opinion, in channel partner sales that are dropping off, you know, all that fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and kind of put this out there as like a placeholder, like, oh, don't get too crazy, you know. It's
don't get crazy, yeah.
Don't get crazy.
Which is our motto here in Framingham.
If only we followed it.
Yeah, I guess it's just so strange that they would, you know, say one minute, you know, the company with the board, hey, we supported the decision to explore a spinoff, and we think we can be more profitable if we make PSG its own business or sell it, and it will help HP as a whole. And now they're coming back, you know, a month later and saying, whoa, 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 we've done this internal review, and now it turns out that either they're not, you know, they're not doing their homework, and they really didn't have this information on hand when they floated the idea a month
ago.
It's
possible, because the way that thing came out, I mean, it was almost like
it seemed forced. It seemed like kind of haphazard. Like,
yeah, it's very haphazard.
Like
it wasn't really meant for public consumption.
Exactly.
When it was put out publicly.
Yes.
So who knows? I mean, none of it made sense. The whole way it was done didn't make sense. I mean, from the get-go, we've been talking about how it didn't make sense. So like I said, we can't really be sitting here today in shock and awe that it still doesn't make sense.
Maybe this will kind of bring a close to HP's lost year, if we can get through this and they do decide to keep PSG. That would be like an early Christmas for a lot of partners.
It would.
So, speaking of PCs and computers.
An early Christmas. Yeah.
Our last story.
The number one story of the week, which I love this story. It's a story that one of our intrepid reporters, Kevin McLaughlin, chased down. And it's about how Apple has taken steps to become more channel friendly, and particularly around its iPad and iPhone, pushing those into the enterprise and doing that with channel partners. You know, Kevin had been looking a lot into a lot of executives and managers that Apple had been bringing on that had a boatload of channel experience. And all of that basically culminated in the launch of a new competency, a technical competency for channel partners that is specifically aimed at certifying channel partners to deploy iPad and iPhone into enterprise accounts. So
yes,
it's a really cool step for channel partners to have like a stamp of approval from Apple that they can go out and say, hey, we're certified here, we know what we're doing on these mobile platforms for a business.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about Dell and kind of the fearfulness that some of the channel has still working with them, and that carries over here to this story as well.
Yes.
You know, there are a lot of channel partners that, you know, don't have good feelings about Apple as a partner. There are a handful that do, but there are a lot that don't. There's actually some commentary on the story right now on the site from some channel partners who were burned by them in the past, particularly when they came out with their retail stores.
Was not a good day.
Apple dealers, you know, a lot of Apple dealers did not fare well with that launch. So, you know, not everyone's going to be embracing Apple with open arms, but hey, I think it's a good step.
Yeah, and the new certification is MTC. Mobility technical competency for Apple resellers, Apple partners, and the consultants network. So I think you're right. I think that will be a good thing, because Apple was a little bit different than Dell in that people hated Dell. Like, people were mad at Dell. Dell was a competitor. Apple was kind of seen until recently as kind of like the underdog, and people wanted to sell them because they had strong brands in certain areas. But once the Apple stores came in and kind of put people like that were selling Apple on the ropes, and now that Apple is eclipsing the PC, they're eclipsing the PC makers. Like, I was just at the Web 2.0 Expo in New York, and you go into those sessions, I'll tell you, there were two types of notebooks and laptops that I saw in that entire you know, that entire conference, mm-hmm. MacBook or MacBook Pro or MacBook Air, and I saw some Lenovo ThinkPads, but I didn't see any HP. I didn't see any Dell. It was all Apple, almost exclusively, and then the iPad was everywhere.
You make a good point in that, you know, Dell, the man, and Dell, the company, were out there actively speaking against the channel.
Yes.
For a very long time. Apple, it was more like they were just too cool.
Dismissive.
To play with the app, with the channel. Yeah. Like, they were too cool for school.
Yeah.
So it is a different vibe, for sure.
Yeah, but it'll be a good thing. I mean, I this was actually kind of interesting. Back at CES a year ago, when there was tablets and smart, I mean, it was like the year of the tablet. Everybody had a tablet. And I can't say who the manufacturer was, but they were doing, like, you know, the CES unveiled, and they were showing off their tablets, and, you know, we've got a new tablet coming out this year. And I said, hey, are you guys selling this through the channel? And the guy said, no, we don't really see the need to. And I said, oh, why not? You know, this, I think tablets could be really a really strong product category for resellers. I think, you know, you're going to start to see them in a lot of businesses and a lot of offices, and we are. And the guy said, well, if Apple's not selling through partners, we don't see why we should. So if Apple starts, you know, selling iPhones and iPads and partners out there integrating that stuff for businesses, I think that's going to put pressure on other manufacturers to kind of say, hey, maybe we should put more of an effort to, you know, win some of that corporate level business by going through partners and letting them do the, you know, the integration and the services work around them. So definitely, it's got to be a plus for the channel. To what degree, who knows, but, you know, the more the merrier. All right. And if that's, we don't have any more stories, so I guess we're done for the week. And I'm Rob Wright.
I'm Andrew Hickey.
And I'm Jen Follett.
And we will see you again next week.